The views and opinions of findings and or devices discussed in this podcast are those of the host, subject matter experts, and or guests. Facts represented constitute our understanding at the time of the podcast, whereas updated factual information may be developed. They should not be construed as pronouncing an official Department of Defense's position, policy, decision, or endorsement. The hosts and guests of Cubis may be defense contract personnel who support Traumatic Brain Injury Center of Excellence, or TBI-COE. Status of all hosts and guests will be identified during introductions to the podcast. Hi, welcome to Clinical Updates in Brain Injury Science Today, or CUBIST, a podcast for healthcare providers about current research on traumatic brain injury, also known as TBI. This program is produced by the TBI-COE. I'm your host today, Don Marion, a contractor in support of TBI-COE. Today, I'll be speaking with Dr. Katie Monti, also a contractor in support of TBI-COE. Katie and I will discuss a study titled Relationship Between Post-Traumatic Headache and Depression After Mild Traumatic Brain Injury by Dr. Marissa Beal and colleagues and published in the Journal of Neuropsychiatry and Clinical Neurosciences in August of 2024. Katie, thank you for being on the podcast and for bringing this article to our attention.
Thank you for having me, Don.
So, Katie, first, I wanted to start off by asking if you wouldn't mind clarifying for our listeners, what exactly is post-traumatic headache?
Absolutely, Don. So this study addresses both acute and persistent post-traumatic headache, or PTH. The International Headache Society defines acute PTH as a headache with onset less than 7 days after a head injury, and persistent PTH as a headache lasting at least 3 months after injury.
So in part, it's the duration, I guess. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thanks, Katie. So why was this study done?
Post-traumatic headache and depression are comorbid conditions after TBI, and PTH has been associated with increased psychological distress, disability, and depressive symptoms. Patients with acute PTH may be more likely to develop chronic pain and have increased depressive symptoms 3 months after their TBI event compared to those without acute PTH. Previous studies have shown that those with pre-existing affective disorders were more likely to develop post-traumatic headache than those without, and persistent headache symptoms were associated with anxiety and depressive symptoms. Pain and depression after mild TBI, referred to as MTBI or concussion, have been linked to poor recovery, lower quality of life, and decreased community participation post-injury. So even though studies have indicated a relationship between post-traumatic headache and mood symptoms, there's more to learn about the extent of that relationship. For example, which patients are at increased risk for developing persistent post-traumatic headache and mood symptoms after their TBI? Headache and mood symptoms can significantly affect a patient's quality of life. So this study aimed to establish the prevalence and severity of post-traumatic headache over the 6 months after MTBI and to determine the predictive relationship between acute post-traumatic headache and the onset of depressive symptoms within 6 months post-injury. The researchers hypothesized that those with acute post-traumatic headache after MTBI would continue to have persistent PTH and more depressive symptoms at 1, 3, and 6 months post-injury than those without acute post-traumatic headache.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised that persistent headache would cause some depression. So how was the study done, Katie?
So this was a secondary analysis of data from the Head Injury Serum Markers for Assessing Response to Trauma, or HEADSMART study, which was a prospective study to identify blood-based TBI biomarkers. Research staff conducted an electronic medical record review of civilian emergency department, or ED, patients to identify those who were eligible for the study. After they consulted with treating providers, they invited eligible patients to participate in the study. Inclusion criteria were age 18 years or older, evaluated in the ED within 24 hours of a blunt head injury, met the American College of Emergency Physicians criteria for receiving a head CT in the ED, received a head CT, and consented to additional blood draws for the study. Patients with a previous history of brain tumors, intracranial surgeries, intracranial hemorrhage, or dementia were not eligible. The researchers included participants who met the Veterans Health Administration and Department of Defense criteria for mild TBI, which is defined as loss of consciousness less than 30 minutes, altered consciousness less than 24 hours, post-traumatic amnesia less than 24 hours, or a Glasgow Coma Scale or GCS score of 13 to 15 points. Those with structural imaging findings or GCS less than 13 were excluded from participation. Demographic, clinical, and injury-related data, per the recommendations from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, were collected from participants in the ED upon study enrollment. Self-reported symptom data related to post-traumatic headache and depressive symptoms were also collected through phone or in-person interviews at the 1, 3, and 6 month post-injury follow-ups. Only those who completed the post-traumatic headache and depressive symptoms measures during at least one follow-up visit were included in the study.
So, Katie, can you tell us a bit about the tests that they used to determine the presence and severity of post-traumatic headache and depression?
Sure. The RiverMead Post-Concussion Symptoms Questionnaire, or just RiverMead as it's commonly referred to, was used to determine the presence of acute post-traumatic headache. The RiverMead assesses for 16 post-concussive symptoms, including headache. The headache question on the RiverMead is stated as, compared with before the accident, do you now, so in this case, over the last 24 hours, suffer from headaches? Response options are on a 4-point Likert scale, with 0 and 1 being not at all or no more of a problem, to 2 to 4, meaning they are reporting that their headaches are a mild, moderate, or severe problem. Those reporting a 2 or 4 were considered to have acute post-traumatic headache, meaning that they were reporting headache within 24 hours of their head injury. They use the RiverMead at each follow-up visit to determine the presence of persistent post-traumatic headache. They also use the Patient Health Questionnaire 9, or PHQ-9, to determine the severity of depressive symptoms. The PHQ-9 consists of 9 DSM-5 depression symptoms. Participants were asked to rate the frequency of each symptom on a scale of 0, meaning not at all, to 3 nearly every day. Total scores on the PHQ-9 range from 0 to 27 points, with higher scores suggesting more severe depressive symptoms. PHQ-9 scores of 10 points or higher indicate moderate to severe depressive symptoms, and that's the cutoff they used for identifying clinically significant depression in this sample.
You know, Katie, if I might just note that I'm impressed that they use both the RiverMead and the PHQ-9, which are pretty common tests and routinely used in TBI studies. So I think that's a real strength. So what did they find?
So 265 eligible individuals made up the study sample because they met the VA-DoD criteria for mild TBI, and they had at least one follow-up visit in which they completed both the RiverMead and the PHQ-9, which I agree is definitely a strength of the study. 39 participants, or 15% of the study sample, reported that they were either not experiencing headache or that headache was no more of a problem. 226 participants, or 85% of the sample, reported mild, moderate, or severe headache. And of the 265 participants, 169 completed both measures at the 1, 3, and 6 month follow-up visits. 53 participants had 2 follow-up visits, and 43 had 1 follow-up visit. Participants were compared as groups based on their report of headache during that initial ED visit. So the group without acute post-traumatic headache consisted of those who reported either not experiencing headache or that headache was no more of a problem, versus the group with acute post-traumatic headache, which consisted of those who reported headache as being mild, moderate, or a severe problem. Overall, the demographic and clinical characteristics of both groups were similar, with age being the only significant difference in that the mean age of the group with acute post-traumatic headache was younger than the group without acute post-traumatic headache, so 40.8 years versus 52.7 years. The percentages of participants who reported headache at the 1 month follow-up was 53%, 46% at 3 months, and 37% at 6 months. The risk of participants with acute post-traumatic headache reporting headache at the 1 month follow-up visit and across all follow-up visits combined was about double compared to those without acute post-traumatic headache. The risk was triple at the 3 month follow-up visit. About 22% of participants with acute post-traumatic headache had clinically significant depression, as indicated by a PHQ-9 score of 10 points or higher, compared to only 3.5% of the participants without acute post-traumatic headache, which was only one participant. Across all the follow-up visits, in which the researchers combined the data from all the follow-ups, participants who reported acute post-traumatic headache had a greater level of depressive symptoms compared to those without acute post-traumatic headache by about 2 to 3 points on the PHQ-9. And that was even after considering follow-up assessment, history of depression, and other demographic and injury characteristics. Those with acute post-traumatic headache were about 2 to 3 times more likely to have clinically significant depression across all follow-up time points, again, when combining data from all of the follow-ups.
So what do you think were some of the strengths and limitations of the study design, Katie?
Right. So even though this was not a military or veteran study, they used the VA-DoD definition for mild TBI, which this is an acceptable case definition and relevant to our military healthcare providers. Also, even though this was a secondary analysis of a pre-existing data set, it included many of those variables that could potentially influence outcomes, such as a history of depression, prior concussion, and several injury characteristics. This allowed the researchers to adjust their statistical models for these factors. However, they did not collect information about headache disorders that existed before the TBI event, which has been shown to be a risk factor for post-traumatic headache. I also like that they not only evaluated depressive symptoms based on the PHQ-9 total score, but that they also broke down the participants into groups based on whether those scores indicated clinically significant depression or not. This made the results more meaningful to me as a prior military clinician who routinely administered the PHQ-9 to acutely concussed patients. But I think a future study might need a larger sample size to increase the confidence of their findings, and it should also consider the influence of post-traumatic stress symptoms when evaluating the relationship between acute post-traumatic headache and clinically significant depression. Another limitation of this study, and quite frankly, across most TBI clinical research, is that patients' symptoms are based on self-report. The RiverMead and the PHQ-9, even though these are standard questions that are administered clinically and in research, are still based on self-report, so they require patients to retrospectively recall and aggregate their symptoms over a time period. For the RiverMead, patients were asked to recall and aggregate headache symptoms since their concussion, which in this study, during those follow-up visits, was 1, 3, or 6 months ago. The PHQ-9 covers the past 2 weeks. So recall bias can influence symptom reporting. Even having a bad day can potentially influence how someone reports their symptoms on a self-report survey. So I can see how something like micro-interaction ecological momentary assessment, or micro-EMA, might be of value in a future study on this topic. The micro-EMA approaches where patients receive brief questions about headache and mood delivered to them through a smartphone or smartwatch throughout the day to collect large amounts of symptom data based in real time and while the patient is in their normal daily work and living environments.
You know, one of the things I'm thinking about too is a limitation is it doesn't include people in the military who have military occupational specialties that involve low-level blast, which I think is an important problem these days. So that, to me, is a bit of a shortcoming. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree. And I think that a future study where the data might be collected prospectively should consider that variable for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for your insights. What are some of the key takeaways from the study for military healthcare providers?
Well, first of all, I think this research topic is highly relevant to clinicians. So while association does not indicate causality, there does appear to be a signal here, and the findings can easily be translated to clinical practice without causing harm to patients. They could potentially provide clinical benefit and can be implemented at any level of clinical provider, including medics, corpsmen, and nurses. Simply screening for and documenting the presence or absence of acute post-traumatic headache during acute concussion care may provide an indicator to follow-up providers that someone may be at an increased risk for more long-term post-traumatic headache and/or depressive symptoms. The Military Acute Concussion Evaluation 2, or MACE-2, has headache listed as a common symptom. So this screening is already included as part of the initial concussion evaluation if the MACE-2 is administered. Also, the Progressive Return to Activity Protocol is an interactive algorithm that provides guidance to primary care providers on returning a service member to duty after concussion. Links to the Neurobehavioral Symptom Inventory, or NSI, and the PHQ-9 are embedded in the Progressive Return to Activity Protocol so that providers can monitor and document their patient's headache severity and mood symptoms at each follow-up visit. So the NSI could potentially be used in place of the river mead, for example, that was used in this study. It's important to continue to assess for headache and depressive symptoms throughout the duration of the patient's care, even if they're referred out to a specialty provider. And if they're endorsing more severe depression or mental health symptoms, refer to an appropriate mental health provider early.
Those are great tips, Katie. Thank you. The MACE-2, PRN, and various clinical recommendations can be found on TBI COE's website. And I'll just quickly highlight that TBI COE updated the Department of Defense clinical recommendations for the assessment and management of headache following concussion earlier this year. Fact sheets on managing headaches and medication overuse headaches following concussion can also be found at TBI COE's website. So it's really a great place to go if you're evaluating a service member with a traumatic brain injury. So thank you again, Katie, for being on the podcast.
It's my pleasure, Don.
So that's all we have time for today. You can stay up to date on future episodes by subscribing to Cubist wherever you listen to podcasts, where you can also find links to the articles we discuss and other relevant resources. Cubist is produced and edited by Vinnie White and was hosted today by me, Don Marion. It is a product of the Traumatic Brain Injury Center of Excellence, a branch of the Research Support Division under the Research and Engineering Directorate of the Defense Health Agency, led by Branch Chief Katie Stout. Thank you for listening to this episode.